Good morning. Being the hour of 9 o'clock, we will call the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting to order. We always start our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance, and if I could, Thomas, would you like to lead us this morning in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Certainly. I would appreciate that.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would ask the Board Secretary if she could call the roll.
Director Record?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
And by phone, Director Corona?
Here.
Very good. Welcome. April, do we have anybody wishing to do general public comment, not a comment based on anything on the agenda, but in general this morning?
Not that I'm aware of. We do have a comment for the public hearing.
Very good. And we'll go to item two, which I understand is a recognition. We have a very special person this morning who not only is our video contest winner, which I cannot wait to see the video, but I believe she's the daughter of one of our employees and also the granddaughter of a friend of mine, former supervisor Josie Gonzalez from San Bernardino County. So with that, Roxanne, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, board directors and staff. As you know, EMWD's education program has a very successful write-off contest for students in 6th through 8th grade, where students author and illustrate a story based on a topic provided by staff. They submit that for the chance of not just winning really cool prizes, but to have their story come to life in the form of a book, which EMWD shares with teachers and students at outreach events and local libraries. To stay consistent with current trends of engagement, as well as on-demand learning resources that 2020 brought us, at the end of last year, for the first time, EMWD launched its first ever video contest called Pipeline Productions for students in grades 9 through 12. For this contest, students were asked to submit a 3-minute video on the topic of where does my water come from and what happens to it after I use it. The winning video would then be launched on EMWD's social platforms for engagement purposes. From the submissions, the top four were chosen and voted on by staff, and I believe we have the winning submission queued up for viewing. Lance?
Thank you.
So the creator of this video is here with us this morning. I'd like to congratulate our inaugural winner, Robin Romo, now a senior at Canyon Springs High School, which is located in the Moreno Valley Unified School District. Please join me in congratulating Robin for putting such creative energy into a project that illustrates the importance of EMWD services. If I could have Robin come up, and then we have President Pauly and Director Slauson come down for a photo.
Absolutely.
Come over here. This photo right here. That was a great video. I wish I could do stuff like that. I'm glad we have people like you that could be the next generation of doing great things like that. So,
yes.
Congratulations. Very good. That will lead us into the public. We have a few public hearings this morning just for planning purposes, though, Joe, I know Director Record has to leave at 11 today. Would you mind if we move the board streaming operations informational piece up to right after the consent calendar, just so I think it's
sure,
important?
Sure, absolutely. I think it's a great idea.
Board-related item that Director Record could hear that, if you could get that going. With that, we have a couple public hearings this morning. I am have a special note here, Mr. Steve is not here, but he always chastises me to make sure I close the public hearing, so I've got that written down. This is the time and place for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the collection of delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services via the 2021-2022 Riverside County property tax roll. I declare the public hearing open and would like to ask for staff report on this proposed action. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Division 20 of the California Water Code provides for delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services to be added to and become part of the annual taxes levied upon the property for which the charges and use occurred. The placing of delinquent and unpaid charges on the secured property tax roll is an established process utilized by water service providers, including use by EMWD in previous years. At this time, it is recommended that the parcels identified in Exhibit A to the proposed resolution be submitted to the County of Riverside's auditor-controller for purposes of collection through this process. The identified parcels represent residential property owners' accounts with a past due balance of $500 or greater for 60 days or more. It is important to note that any account having an active payment plan, regardless of balance owed, has been excluded from this list. I would be happy to answer any questions that the board may have at this time.
Does the board have any questions regarding this? Director Corona, any questions from you?
I have no questions.
Okay, good. I'd like to ask the board secretary how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published in the Press Enterprise, a local newspaper, on July 7th, 2021, and again on July 14th, 2021. Letters were also mailed to the address of record for affected property owners.
If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd ask her to provide copies, therefore, of the Board.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Very good. Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone, I'd ask if any members of the public would like to comment. I also understand we have one, I believe, in chambers here. Do we have any people on the phone that would like to comment on this?
Are there any callers who would like to participate at this time? We're not aware of any present calling.
Then I would like to bring up Mr. Hernandez, who would like to make a public comment regarding this. Sir, please come up to the podium. Th- Thank you for attending the hearing. We normally give our people who'd like to speak around 3 minutes, if you could.
Okay, thank you so much. Yeah, my name is Alejandro Hernandez, and I've been in Riverside 82 years, okay? And what's happening here, by using the tax collector as a collection agency for Eastern Municipal Water District, is wrong. What you're doing is you're shifting responsibility. Eastern entered into a contract with the people that are getting the commodity, you know, the water, okay? So what's happened now is that you guys are putting it on the homeowner, on their taxes. That's not fair, because, and I'll tell you why, it can add up to many hundreds of dollars. Because sometimes when you are a landlord and you have a tenant in there that is not paying rent, it takes months and months and months to get them out. There's a lot of ways to defer that. You're aware of all these ways, okay? Then what they do is they slap it on his tax bill. He had nothing to do with it. You guys are the ones to do it. Why don't you guys form your own collection agency and do it that way? Now, let me give you another example of what's happened. Waste Management has been doing that for years, okay? What happens? So you get a landlord, a tenant in there, they're being evicted. They don't pay their waste pickup. Then the landlord gets over $1,000 bills for that. That is wrong. I think that the Board of Supervisors needs to look at it, and I think what they need to do is change that policy, because, hey, what's keeping Edison from doing it? What's keeping the gas company from doing it, using our tax collection people as a collection agency for your, agencies? It's not right. Another thing I want to talk real quickly of is your late fee policies. Your late fee policies need to be really looked at really carefully. There have been bills of $15 and $18 that are a couple of days late. $25 late fee on them. That's outrageous. I'll give you a list of all the other municipalities that aren't doing that. They have $1 or $5 or something like that, but not $25, something that is more than what the water they used. And then if you put your water, all these other charges on it, hey, it comes out to $70, $90 for a $15 water usage. That's not right. But anyway, I'd like for you to answer those questions, why you're doing with the with the collection fees, why you're so exorbitant, and I'd also like to have an answer as to why are you going using our tax agency and other tax people to do your job for you? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir.
President Pauly, if I could please... respond. Sure. Just a couple of clarifications. The action before you today is to place on the tax rolls a select delinquent accounts. And what I mean by that is those are property owners. They're not renters. These are not tenants. These are property owners that have been delinquent in paying their bills for over 60 days, and the amount that is delinquent is over $500. I do want to mention that our staff has done extensive outreach to these customers, to all of our delinquent customers, to attempt to arrange for payment plans, to try to reach an understanding for payment of the delinquent accounts. Having, in some cases, not received responses or not being able to reach those arrangements, we looked at our options, and this is an option where we would financially be... made whole. So this is an action, again, of a subset of the arrearages. It represents about less than 20% of our total arrearages that we've realized. So I just wanted to clarify, this does not include renters or tenants.
Thank you for that clarification, Joe. At this time, I see no other speakers, so I will declare the public hearing closed. I believe we are ready to adopt the following resolution. If I could get a motion, a second, to adding unpaid charges for water and other services pursuant to Division 20, Part 9, Chapter 1, Section 72094, 72100 of the California Water Code to the 2021-2022 secured property tax roll. Do I have a motion.
Yeah, I think, you know, the staff does a great job of trying to work with our customers, make payment arrangements, accommodate, and when all those things fail, this is a necessary step to ensure we're recovering the cost for the services that we provide. So I would make that motion that we approve this.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
Well, I was just going to say I'll make the second, and I appreciated Joe's clarification with regards to the ownership versus rental.
A second by Director Sullivan. Would you please call the roll?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Rickard?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
The resolution that we have just adopted approves the collection of delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services via the 2021-2022 Riverside County Property Tax Bill. With that, we will move on to our second public hearing of the morning. This is the time and the place for the duly noticed public hearing regarding the collection of annual payments for Wine Country Special Benefit Area Finance Agreements on the property tax rolls for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2021. I declare this public hearing open. I would like to ask for a staff report on these proposed actions. Good morning, Mr. Hayes.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. In November 2013, the district created a special benefit area in the Wine Country area of Temecula and established a special benefit area surcharge in order to spread the cost of construction of sewer infrastructure to area participants. The board authorized a financing program to assist property owners with the payment of the special benefit area surcharge and certain financial participation charges associated with the connection to the Wine Country sewer system. On July 6, 2016, the board adopted Ordinance 2016-006, which established the collection of these financing payments on the property tax roll beginning July 1, 2016. Last year, for fiscal year 2020-21, the district levied 23 parcels for a total assessment amount of $246,177. As of June 9, 2021, the district has received 95% of those assessments. Approximately 12,000, or 4.9%, remains delinquent. The delinquencies are down compared to this time last year, which was 12%. And it's widely expected the contributing factors to the delinquencies relate to the economic impact COVID-19 had on the wineries, as well as travel, dining, and tourism industries. Staff will be reaching out to the delinquent wineries to discuss their plans to bring the delinquencies current. The district will levy 23 parcels for this coming fiscal year 2021-2022, for a total assessment amount of $188,881. Staff has prepared a Wine Country Sewer Infrastructure Financing Special Assessment Report per Health and Safety Code 5473, identifying each parcel to be charged and the amortized annual payment. This report was filed with the board secretary on June 16th, 2021.
Do we have any questions at this time for Thomas regarding this? I have one. When you said we're reaching out to delinquent owners, what? Just give me a flavor of what that looks like. Are we having a special meeting with them? Or?
Last year, we attempted to give them a call. We were unable to achieve that. We sent a letter, and over half of the delinquent wineries paid those delinquent amounts. The amounts remaining outstanding this year, two of them relate to this current or the previous tax year, and then one of those payments relates to the prior year's tax year. We'll be working with our consultant, NBS, who assists us with Wine Country Administration, to see how we can better reach out to that winery that we were unable to receive payment from.
Okay, very good. At this time, I'd like to ask the board secretary how this hearing was noticed.
The Wine Country Sewer Infrastructure Financing Special Assessment Report was filed on June 16, 2021. Notice of the filing of the report proposing to have annual Wine Country charges for the upcoming fiscal year collected on the tax roll and the time and place of this hearing was published in the Press Enterprise, a local newspaper. on July 16th and July 13th, 2021, in accordance with Government Code Section 6066.
Very good. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest to the proposal, I'd like to ask her to provide that to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposals have been received.
Very good. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone or in person, I'd like to ask that any members of the public who would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Do we have anybody on the phone?
We are not aware of any callers.
Very good. And I understand we have no request to speak.
Correct.
Here in the chambers. Very good. In that case, I will declare the public hearing closed. There has not been a protest made by the owners, the majority of the separate parcels of property described in the report. The board now has the option to adopt, revise, change, reduce, or modify any payments in the report. If no revisions are requested, we are ready to adopt the following resolution: that the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District approving the collection of annual payments for the Wine Country Sewer Special Benefit Area Financing Agreements on the property tax roll for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2021. I will look for a motion and a second to adopt the resolution.
I'll move the resolution.
I'll make that motion.
So we will have Director Record made the motion. Director Corona, I will put you down as a second on that. Could I please have a roll call?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Your resolution is adopted by a vote of 5-0. The resolution that we have just adopted approves the filed Wine Country Financing Special Assessment Report, along with the collection of annual payments for Wine Country Sewer Special Benefits Financing Agreements on the property tax rolls for fiscal 2021-2022. That will conclude this public hearing. We will now move on to our third and final public hearing of the morning. This is the time and place set for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the collection of annual sewer charges for sewer-only accounts on the property tax rolls for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2021. I declare this public hearing open and would like to ask for a staff report. Mr. Hayes.
In July 2015, the Board adopted Ordinance 2015-003, which established the collection of annual sewer charges on the property tax rolls for sewer-only accounts. These are sewer accounts not connected to EMWD water system. In fiscal year 2020-21, the district levied 132 parcels for a total assessment amount of $66,517. As of June 29th, 2021, the district has received $66,011 of these assessed charges, resulting in a very low delinquency rate of just under 1%. The district will levy the same 132 parcels for the coming fiscal year, 2021-22, for a total assessment amount of $68,218. All charges have been calculated in the same manner as non-sewer-only accounts in accordance with the consolidated schedule of rates, fees, and charges. Staff prepared a sewer-only accounts special assessment report per Health and Safety Code 5473 attached to the board letter as Exhibit A. This report identifies each of the parcels to be levied as well as their calculated annual sewer charge and was filed with the board secretary on June 16, 2021.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Hayes on this item? No. Director Corona, any questions from you?
I have no questions.
Okay, very good. I will ask the board secretary how the hearing was noticed.
Notice of the filing of this report proposing to have annual sewer charges for the upcoming fiscal year collected on the tax roll and of the time and place of this hearing was published in the Press Enterprise, a local newspaper, on July 6th and July 13th, 2021, in accordance with Government Code Section 6066.
Very good. If the Secretary of the Board has received any written protest of proposal, I'd ask her to provide copies to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposals have been received.
Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in this hearing by phone or in person, I'd like to ask any members of the public who'd like to comment on this item, please do so now. Please state your name for the record. And do we have any people on the phone? Any
We are not aware of any callers.
Aware of any members on the phone. I do not see any speaker's cards for this item in the chambers. Thus, I will declare the public hearing closed. There has not been a protest made by the owners of a majority of the separate parcels of property described in the report. The board is now has the option to adopt, revise, change, reduce, or modify any charges to changes to the report. If no revisions are requested, we are ready to approve the following resolution, which is a resolution by the Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District approving the collection of annual sewer charges for sewer-only accounts on the property tax roll for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2021. I will ask for a motion and a second.
I'll move approval.
Motion made by Director Slauson.
A second.
Second by Director Armstrong. I ask for a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
The motion passes 5-0. The resolution we've just adopted approves the filed sewer-only account special assessment report along with the collection of annual sewer charges for the sewer-only accounts on the property tax roll for fiscal year 21-22. And that takes care of our public hearings this morning. With that, we will go to our general manager's report. And Joe, I'd like to start off by noting there is a new face down in the desk that you used to previously sit at. So you might want to make note of that this morning, and I want to offer a congratulations along those lines.
Absolutely. President Pauly, good morning again. Good morning to the board members. As noted, President Pauly, we're very pleased to welcome Ms. Linnea Alexander as our newest Assistant General Manager of Planning, Engineering, and Construction Branch. As you know, in addition to her recent service to MWD as our Senior Director of Water Resource Planning, Linnea has extensive experience in the water industry, having worked for over 20 years as a consultant serving many water agencies throughout Southern California, advancing their water initiatives and programs, including the Indirect Potable Reuse Program down in Orange County, as well as San Diego. So we're just very pleased to have her on board. She is a registered civil engineer, graduated from Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and it's just been a pleasure having worked with her over the years. So with that, again, welcome, Linnea.
Thank you.
President Poly, my report is included in your packet. Several items that are currently ongoing and of interest to the board. As you are aware, on July 7th, Governor Newsom expanded California's emergency drought declaration to 9 more counties, bringing the total to 50 counties across the state that are now under the drought state of emergency. While Riverside County is not currently under an emergency drought declaration, the governor called for all Californians to voluntarily reduce water use by 15% as compared to 2020 levels. EMWD responded to the governor's announcement with a press release outlining our drought and water supply status, which is stage 2 of the water shortage contingency plan. We are asking for voluntary conservation of our customers for up to 25%. EMWD will also be issuing 3 more press releases by the end of the month to highlight July as Smart Irrigation Month, announce the kickoff of regional drought messaging through the Inland Empire Clean Water Partnership, and promote the launch of EMWD's Landscapes for Living Outdoor Water Use Efficiency Program. And in fact, we'll have an informational item on that later this morning. EMWD will continue to focus on ways customers can reduce water use by implementing techniques outdoors where most of the water can be saved and the savings can be realized. On a separate matter, on July 11th, the budget trailer bill AB 148 was introduced, which provides details for the $985 million in state funding for COVID-19-related water and wastewater customer arrearages, and outlines distribution of those funds by the State Water Resources Control Board. The State Board will complete surveys among the water providers to determine the statewide totals for water arrearages and then establish guidelines for the application process. Once that process is established, community water systems will have 60 days to apply for those funds. Small community water systems will be prioritized, and largest arrearages as well will be prioritized. Wastewater arrearages will be eligible for relief funding only if enough funding remains available after drinking water arrearages are addressed. The State Board is required to begin distribution of those funds by November 1st of this year and complete distribution of the funds by January of 2022, January 31st. The bill has passed the legislature and is awaiting the governor's signature. So we continue to monitor, and we will be pursuing application to those funds. Wanted to provide you with an update on the governor's executive order as it relates to the Brown Act agenda posting requirements. As you may be aware, on June 11th, in advance of the June 15th state reopening date, Governor Newsom issued an executive order outlining the expiration dates for the more than 50 executive orders that were issued to address elements of the pandemic emergency response by the state. This most recent executive order in June identified that all provisions concerning the conduct of public meetings, as identified in the previous executive order, will expire September 30th of this year. Pertaining to the Brown Act requirements, there is an assembly bill, Assembly Bill 361, which is sponsored by the California Special Districts Association and supported by EMWD, which seeks to codify elements of the governor's executive order by allowing public agencies to meet remotely without complying to all agenda posting requirements for remote board member participation during a declared emergency. This bill will be heard during the Senate floor session, and if it is passed, which we're hearing that there's a high likelihood that it will pass, it will go into effect on January 1st, 2022. We're going to continue to monitor this issue and developments related to it. Moving on to another item I wanted to update the board on, which is the board division boundary updates. As you may be aware, the Census Bureau provided an update on July 12th indicating that they are still on track to release the redistricting data set by August 16th. This will be the first data that will be available to us from the 2020 census down to the census block level. According to the Census Bureau, the initial release will be in a so-called legacy format, and there will be a subsequent release of the same data in a more user-friendly format by September 30th of this year. We are going to initiate the process that we discussed with the board previously upon availability of the initial data in mid-August. So we will have more information that will be forthcoming to the board on this issue. Under items of interest to the board, last Friday, Jolene Walsh and myself attended a meeting that was hosted by Inland Empire Utilities Agency and at the request of Metropolitan's new general manager, as well as Chairwoman Gray was in attendance. The meeting was titled We Are One. The intent of the meeting was to reinforce the need for unity among Metropolitan's member agencies. There was also significant discussion on the developing drought conditions that we are facing and discussion of a collective approach among the member agencies to provide drought messaging to Southern California. So it was a healthy, robust discussion. The recommendation among the general managers was that Metropolitan should consider upgrading its water supply condition to a water supply alert, which entails a regional call for conservation through drought messaging and ordinances and other measures to mitigate the use of storage. Finally, under items of interest to the board, on July 2nd, our maintenance staff, in coordination with a contractor that we had retained, completed the replacement of the existing inflatable dam located along Reach 4 down in Elsinore. This is the energy dissipation facility. The dam had reached end of its useful life, and in coordination with Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, we wanted to make certain that facility continues to be operational. As you will recall, that inflatable dam prevents the discharge recycled water from entering Lake Elsinore. So pleased to report that project was completed, and we will be coordinating with Elsinore Valley on the final cost reconciliation. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have on any of these items.
Any questions for the general manager? Director Corona, any questions for the general manager?
No questions.
Very good. Thank you. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick, do you have anything this morning?
Yes, thank you. I have one item. I've reported on this a couple of times previously. I'm pleased to let you know that the emergency sewer repair work on Pechanga Parkway as of late last night is now complete. Just as a reminder, a couple of months ago, we were notified by the city of Temecula that there was a settlement of the street pavement on Pechanga Parkway immediately over our sewer main. We immediately went out there and did some investigation, some borings, televising, and discovered that we had a 20-inch sewer main about 20 foot deep that was broken and leaking. There was about a 6-inch offset. So we initiated an emergency repair contract, developed a scope of work, and then about a month ago had T.E. Roberts mobilized to conduct those repairs. At that time, based on the scope and what we understood, we thought that that work would take about a week to perform. We worked closely with the city and Metropolitan, who had a pipeline nearby, to make sure the work was coordinated and the community was aware of what was going on, because it would entail some extensive bypassing. We quickly found out once we started excavating and getting close to the pipe zone, there was excessive groundwater that we had not anticipated. So we had to bring in another specialty contractor to install some groundwater dewatering wells. They provided us a proposal to put four in. We put those in series. Ultimately, we only needed three to get the groundwater under control. With that, we were able to complete that work. So, as I said, as of last night, that work is completed. The pipe has been repaired. The excavation has been backfilled. Street has been restored. All that's remaining is some lane restriping that needs to take place. And again, it was, you know, very, very carefully coordinated with the city. We anticipate with this that on our August 18th board meeting that we will be back to ratify the work, the cost, the contract to do this. And between now and then, we need to reconcile costs for that. So we'll bring all that information back. But I do want to recognize our team, you know, between operations, engineering, PGA. It was an emergency repair. The fix was fairly straightforward once we were able to get to it and get it conducted. But to make sure that was done and coordinate well with Metropolitan community, it was very successful. Didn't, as far as I know, unless April tells me otherwise, we had no pushback or negative feedback from the community. So I think everything went well. So I'm pleased with the team effort. Any questions?
Very good. Any questions for Nick? No, very good. Thank you for kind of taking the lead and supervising that, because that was an issue. So thank you, Nick. Mr. Wall, I believe this is your last official board meeting, so I'm afraid to ask if you have anything for
one
us.
More.
One more. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun there. It's the next one I'll be afraid what to ask. Do you have anything?
We did have a leak on a water line in Quail Valley Sunday evening. The Quail Valley water system was constructed in 1963, and it's entirely made of steel pipe. And as you would guess, the standards for installation of valves and constructive system were different back then, so valving was limited. And with the net result being that we were able to isolate the leak, but in doing so, highlighting it, limited capacity, we had low pressure at about 225 customers through the evening, starting at 10 p.m. until 6 in the morning. And there were actually 12 residences that were without water for that same duration. But crews were quickly able to get that back into service, did a great job. To my knowledge, we did not receive any complaints, but just so you're aware, that did occur. That's it.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Wall? And our newest member, anything this morning?
Nothing this morning, other than I just wanted to express my appreciation for the opportunity to continue to serve EMWD in this capacity, so thank you.
Very good.
Okay, welcome to the audio conferencing center.
Yeah,
please enter a conference ID followed by pound.
Take a timeout then.
You're now joining the meeting.
Okay, so should we just stay here then?
I think so.
I think we're, Dr. Corona, we're back on. Can you hear us?
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yes.
Just, Just to check, we also have legal counsel on the line.
I'm here as well. Okay, thank you.
Just don't like to go too far without
legal counsel. Did you finish the meeting while we were gone?
Almost.
All right. With that, that will bring us to item 5, which is our consent calendar this morning. Are there any directors that wish to pull an item off the consent calendar for separate discussion or separate vote? Hearing none, I will look for a motion and a second for the consent calendar this morning.
Move the consent calendar.
I'll second. By Director Record, second by Director Slauson. Would you please call the roll?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
And that brings us to a 5-0 vote to pass the consent calendar. As I mentioned, I think in light of just dropping a call, I think it might be helpful while Director Record is here if we could go ahead and do informational item B, which is the board meeting streaming operations. Again, this is not looking for a decision today, but I did want to bring some information forward of how we may, going forward, up our game on webcasting and other opportunities for the public to attend our meeting without physically being in the chambers here. So, Mike, I believe you have a presentation this morning.
Yes, good morning, everyone. So, this was a director request item. We're basically going to take a look at how we conduct our board meetings today and talk about a couple of options that the directors might want to take a look at for future board meetings. So today we use a meeting platform called Microsoft Teams. The public connect and actually participate via telephone only at this time, so they dial in. If the public wants to look at agenda and attached presentations, they can do so by going to the EMWD website and downloading a full agenda. The meeting audio is recorded live and then saved and published to our EMWD website following each board meeting. So this is option one. We're going from the simpler options to the more complicated option. Option one that we're presenting here is what I'll call an online public meeting, which essentially means that the live presentations are not only shared within the boardroom, but they're also available to the public. So we would essentially make the Microsoft Teams session available to the public. They could log in and access that live meeting just like employees of EMWD. The agenda PDF could also be displayed during the meeting, during discussions and in between presentations, so the public could follow along. And it would also allow the directors to attend and participate in the online meeting via that Microsoft Teams system. So in order for the public to actually comment in this scenario, they would still be required to call in. So they would essentially have their local camera and computer audio disabled. For this option, there's no cost and the implementation is relatively quick. There's very little changes we'd need to make to our current setup today. And here's some examples of how it might look during a meeting organized in this fashion. So at the top, you'll see open session and discussions, and the screenshot that we show there is, as you're aware, the agenda, and we could scroll through that to allow folks to better follow along with the board meeting. The bottom screenshot is just a screenshot of the presentation, just like you see it today. The only difference being the public can see it live as well. So option two would be the what I would call online public meeting with video. So the main difference between the former option and this option is we could provide a live video feed. And by that, what I mean is we could allow cameras within the boardroom to capture certain aspects of the live event as it's happening. We have a camera at the back of the boardroom up on the wall there that could capture the dais and show the directors during the meeting. And we also have a camera behind you that is aimed at the lectern so that during presentations, the person presenting could also have live video. In this particular case, we would record the Microsoft Teams meeting. Instead of just the audio, we'd have both the audio and the video as a bundle, and that would be what's published for folks to dial in or to download and look at. Estimated cost is about $4,000. It does involve a few changes to programming the system that we use to control the boardroom electronics, and also includes a video converter that we use essentially to provide the inset video that I'll show in the next slide. So that implementation we're estimating we could complete in 2 to 3 months. And here's an example. Please note that the camera angles and zoom in, zoom out can all be changed, but this is an example of the top screenshot of the dais captured live video within the Microsoft Teams application. And the bottom screenshot is an example of what would happen during a presentation. Effectively, you would have an inset, essentially webcam video, of the dais being shown in the small corner while the presentation is full screen. During an oral presentation, we could flip the video feed so that you're seeing the front side of the presenter at the lectern. And while the presentation is up, if that person's presenting, not just orally, but if they've got a presentation deck to show, they would be shown in this inset webcam feed. So very similar to what you're used to today with online meetings. Option three is what I call full production streaming. So this is essentially if you dream it, you can make it happen. It utilizes what's called a content delivery network. So we actually would stream the video and audio feed out to a content delivery provider, and that allows us to basically make any type of video and audio combinations possible. We could do split screens. We could do animated transitions. Basically anything that you see on TV today with live presentations, we could make happen. It's just a matter of how complicated you want to get. Significant changes would be required to our existing processes and our electronics control system. It would require a video producer during the meetings, and I would think that would be an outsourced individual. We don't have folks in-house that are adept at that type of meeting conducting. So the general public would effectively connect to a website to access and look at the view-only stream. I liken it to when you log on to the web and you're looking at a sporting event, you're basically opening up a video feed of that sporting event, and you cannot do a two-way interaction with it. They would have a dial-in number for public comment, and directors and remote presenters would join the Microsoft Teams online meeting, not the web stream. So again, like I said earlier, it's very highly configurable. We can do custom text, watermarks, etc. Meetings can be recorded for publishing and viewing. So it would be the entire audio-video feed that folks could look at after the meeting's been conducted. And one-time costs vary significantly. It really depends on how complicated we want to get. And that would include things like additional cameras, a streaming workstation, which assembles all the video feeds and allows you to do those transitions, configuration, installation, and testing. There are some relatively significant recurring costs with this option. First, you have to pay for the content delivery network. That's the likes of like a YouTube, etc. They actually consume the video feed and make it available online. And then whatever costs are attributable to the outsourced video producer, we're looking at probably $300 to $600 per meeting. Implementation timeline also depends on how complicated we want to get there. Here's an example of a streamed live event. And you can see that here we're actually just on a web page and we're consuming this video screen rather than accessing the meeting via Zoom or Microsoft Teams. So here's a look at other agencies and what they're doing with regards to remote meetings. The column on the left is similar to the options 1 and 2 that I went over with you. And that would include Metropolitan, MODOC, IEUA, West Basin, East Bay, and Rancho Water. On the right, we have a handful of folks who are actually doing full production streaming. That includes Western County of San Bernardino and the Riverside County Board of Supervisors. And then we also have a handful of agencies that are not streaming today at all. Another thing to keep in mind is that post-COVID, some of these agencies may decide to discontinue the use of online meetings. Whether that's likely or not, I'm not sure. And with that, if you want to review any options or have further questions, please let me know.
Thank you. That's a good presentation for the board to start giving some thought to. Are there any current questions that we might have on this?
Not for me. Okay.
Director Armstrong?
Not so much of a question, but I think those are all really good options. And I kind of see the last year as sort of something that's transformational to us all in so many ways of life, including how we work and telecommuting and using technology more and even public meetings like you've shown some of these agencies that are using it. I can't see everything going back to the old status quo. So I think this is a very large agency geographically. And, you know, we have meetings in the morning and people commute to work. And so the more we can do to be transparent and have access, open access, the better. So for me, I like going to the furthest extreme that we could, your option three and further, you know. So I think it's great, and I think the costs are surprisingly reasonable in my mind. I thought it would have been a lot more to get to option three. So, but anyways, I appreciate the information.
Thank you. Given the fact that, you know, within the past year, we actually upgraded all of the control systems in the boardroom, so it facilitated a lot of this. And thankfully, we got that done ahead of COVID.
President Pauly, if I may, yeah, maybe
let
to facilitate.
Let me ask first if Director Corona has any questions for Mike. Director Corona?
Well, I really don't have any questions other than I'm a little concerned about the costs on the full production method. But like Jeff just said, I think that you know, we've gone beyond just coming out, everyone coming to a meeting in a single place. So that's all I have to say.
Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, President Pauly. So I think that there is a opportunity before the board today to give us some direction, and I think this is an opportunity to provide greater engagement and transparency with our customers and the public. One thing to consider is that the transition between option one and option two can be accomplished fairly easily. So a consideration for the board is to sort of enter this next phase of transparency with the community by implementing option one, see how it works out with the reception from our customers and the community. And if it is as successful as we expect it to be, then we can consider a subsequent step in the future to transition. So there is an incremental approach here that the board can consider. You know, option three, I think, as Mike said, there are some costs that we would have to consider. But the transition between option one and two can be implemented fairly easily down the road. So that'd be my input to the discussion, is you may want to consider an incremental approach to this issue.
Thank you, Joe. If I could make a suggestion, Joe, you might want to think about putting this on a future agenda for the executive committee, and maybe we could come back with a recommendation for the full board. I mean, I agree with Director Armstrong and Director Cronin, and I think everybody. It's a changing world. the way people attend things, it has taught us over the last year. I don't know exactly where we want to be, but I'd like to at least maybe have a further discussion at executive committee and then bring this back at a future item to the whole board to have a further discussion on. Is that okay with you, Director Rickard?
Sounds good. I mean, everybody agrees transparency is really important. And yeah, we do meet in the morning, and so we want to make it as easy as possible for people to monitor the meetings and provide input. I'm a little concerned that I have seen some agencies that have gone to the ultimate, and they end up with sort of a circus from time to time. And, you know, so I look forward to the discussion in the exec committee. And
my understanding, Mike, is Director Rickard's point, MET currently uses what we would, what you provided as option two, I believe.
Right.
Committee meetings are recorded, and the board meetings have the full video.
Okay. So there's some, you know, history or with what your experience at MET is. So I trust you. When you say circus, I know what we mean, and I understand that happens. But I think there is a balance to this. So why don't we agendize this for executive committee and
look forward to
in August or September we can bring this back to the full board. Mike, I really appreciate the work you put into this, and I thought you brought a really good presentation to us. So thank you this morning.
Yeah, thank you all for your time. Mm-hmm.
Very good. With that, we will go to our action calendar. Item 6A, which is to approve and ratify emergency repairs to De Anza Lift Station in the amount not to exceed $397,000. Good morning.
Good morning. So today I'm here to talk about De Anza Lift Station and the repair efforts. De Anza Lift Station is located on Sanderson Road. It's north there, and you'll notice it sits right on the curve of North Sanderson before it meets up with Ramona Expressway. It was constructed in 2004. So on May 21st, a vehicle crashed into the motor control center at De Anza Lift Station. And if you'll notice the damage to the back of the vehicle, that occurred when it impacted the awning. That's approximately 14 feet high, and the car came down into our gear. So staff was able to isolate the damaged section and get the pump running in manual operation and had full pumping operation restored within 6 days, which is an incredible. They prevented a lift. They were back online within 3 hours, and it was really quite an effort for them to do that. So if you look at the photo on the left, you can see the tire tracks going through the field across the gravel, and you can see the bank where the vehicle hit and then became airborne. And the photo on the right, those dash lines are where the vehicle flew over our site and landed into our gear. So it was really, really quite an accident. We were kind of talking about it. If our awning wasn't there, it might have just skipped all the gear altogether and ended up in the field behind the lift station. So the first thing our crews had to do was isolate the damaged gear. And the photo on the top left there is our communication and control cabinet. We lost that during that accident, and that's the reason for manual operation. We weren't able to remotely monitor or even operate the facility in any kind of auto mode. So you can see the bottom photo shows that the damage to the awning and the air conditioner was damaged, and then three MCC sections were destroyed. So to date, we've removed the three damaged MCC sections, and we've ordered the replacement sections. Everything is in full auto and back and operating normal for now. We're working on obtaining the rest of the quotes we need to make the final repairs. And the property damage is covered under the district's commercial insurance property with a $15,000 deductible, so that was good news. And we expect to complete final repair efforts by February of 2022. That's assuming we don't have any delays in delivery of our equipment. Right now, everything's kind of being delayed. So the project cost estimate for labor materials to date and then all the other equipment that's going to be required to make these repairs is $397,000. So the recommendation is to ratify the purchase of electrical gear from Consolidated Electrical Distributors and approve and authorize expenditures for the repairs of De Anza Lift Station in the amount not to exceed $397,000. Are there any questions?
Well, I assume our insurance company is going to go after the driver's insurance company, but what about the $15,000 deductible? How do we, we need to be able to to capture that out-of-pocket expense.
I'm not sure how that's captured, but I can get back to you on that one.
Yeah, Director Record, I believe that our insurance will follow up and try to recover those costs, whether they're successful or not. We don't know. We don't know what right. insurance or ability the individual that crashed into our facility has to cover those costs. So we'll see whether that ends up. So at this point in time, there's no guarantee that we would recover the $15,000 in deductible.
No, I'm sure there's no guarantee, but I'd certainly like to see an effort.
We're going to pursue that.
Yeah. And I'll move this item.
I think Director Slauson, you had a question?
Yeah, I just had one question. The insurance coverage, does it also cover our own in-house labor?
Yes, it includes everything on there. We've been working with the insurance company going through passing information back and forth so they can see all of that. So it's all of the costs. Anything you saw on that cost estimate, they're covering all of that.
And my understanding is that the insurance company has already made a good faith determination to advance funding to some level to allow us to apply the resources necessary to do the work and the improvements.
I don't know the person that had the accident, but most car insurance doesn't go up to $400,000.
Right.
So I'll second it.
Okay, so we have a motion, a second. I had Director Armstrong, any questions? Director Corona, any questions on this?
No questions.
Very good. I had just one quick one. In our repair, are we going to put some sort of barrier maybe in front of this so the next time a car goes careening towards it gets stopped before they crash into our...
Doug Heffley's group is working on that right now to figure out how we may mitigate this effort in the future. That is something we're looking into.
Okay, very good. So we have a motion by Director Record, a second by Director Slauson. May you call the roll, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Passes 5-0. Item 6B is to approve and ratify emergency repairs associated with the Golden Triangle lift station in the amount not to exceed $189,000.
It was a rough couple of weeks for lift stations at the district here. So Golden Triangle is located on Miri Hot Springs Road in between the 15 and the 215. It's a lift station that has been slated to go away several times, just pending the development of the Golden Triangle development. On June 3rd, so 2 weeks after the ANSA incident, a vehicle hit a hydrant and resulted in the flooding of the lift station. So you can see the water line there on the building. It reached approximately 4 feet inside the building. So collection staff was able to keep up and had the lift station bypassed by sunrise that morning. It happened about 2 in the morning, and we had it bypassed by sunrise. Unfortunately, it's a smaller lift station, so we were able to bypass it. If we had this at the ANSA, we wouldn't have been able to bypass without some additional pumping. So the site was returned to normal operation, utilizing rental pumps within 2 days, which is phenomenal considering it was completely flooded. So this site, it may have been an oversight at the time, but when it was designed in a bowl so that it would keep any spills internal to the site, which is great, with the exception of we have a wet well drywall configuration and the pumps are kept in the drywall, the pumps and motors in the drywall. So the photo here shows the fire hydrant that was hit, and we've since removed that fire hydrant. And then collection staff there, that was part of their bypassing the equipment. And if you look over on the photo on the right, you can see where the wall is wet on the inside. That's the level water got to inside the building where our electrical gear is kept. So the drywall here, you can see that it's completely submerged. That was one of the things we had to tackle once we got the bypass in, was getting in there and get that equipment out and repaired. And then the employee on the right there is pointing to the water line that was inside the electrical gear. Fortunately, there wasn't much damage to that. We were able to just replace a couple components and get back online. And with the exception of losing the standby generator, we were pretty unscathed electrically, with the exception of some rebuilds. So the original, the pumps shown in this photo are the temporary pumps that we installed. The original pumps have been rebuilt and reinstalled, and we currently have a temporary emergency standby generator on site to help us since we lost our permanent generator. We have since placed the order for the replacement generator, and then that's expected to be delivered November, December timeframe, so we're estimating January 2022 for the repairs to be complete. So the total cost, the repair estimate for this, including labor, equipment, and materials to date, is $189,000. So mostly what we have remaining is some cleanup and replacement of the emergency standby generator, and then the rental cost for the temporary generator that we have on site. So today we're recommending that the board approve and ratify expenditures for emergency repairs associated with the flooding of the Golden Triangle Lift Station in the amount not to exceed $189,900. Does anybody have any questions?
Any questions? Director Armstrong, I'm sorry, Director Corona, any questions?
No questions.
I'll look for a motion and a second to approve.
I'd make the motion to approve staff's recommendation.
I'll second it.
I'll second it.
He seconded.
Well, Director Armstrong made the motion. Director Corona second. Could you please call the roll?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Item C is not about a damaged lift station. It is to adopt two proposed resolutions establishing assessments, community facilities district, special taxes, general obligation bond rates on the property tax roll for 2021-2022.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
This action item is brought to the board annually to adopt two resolutions, one of which establishes the assessment district and community facilities district levy and authorizes the County of Riverside to place those levies on the property tax roll for the coming tax year. The other resolution sets the general obligation tax rates and provides the County of Riverside the necessary information in order to collect those taxes. Regarding general obligation bonds, the district issued GO bonds in 2005 and 2009 to finance capital projects that were being replaced due to age and/or being upgraded to improve operations of existing facilities. The facilities finance benefited several improvement districts within EMWD's service area, and the amount financed in each improvement district varied depending on the facilities that were financed, which results in varying debt service amounts and the appropriate tax rate for each improvement district in order to pay for the debt service. The tax rates will remain unchanged from the prior year. That is, there will be no increase to the tax rates for this coming fiscal year, 2021-22. And given the favorable market conditions we've been experiencing, staff will be pursuing a refunding of the outstanding GO bonds this fiscal year in order to achieve and pass on additional savings to property owners. We're in the early stages of this, but the item will be brought before the board for consideration at a later time. Regarding the assessment district and CFD levy, the not-to-exceed levy amount for fiscal year 2021-22 is $24,511,325. Don't worry, I won't ask you to repeat that amount, but I will give you some additional information on this. This amount represents an increase over the prior year by about $742,000. The increase consists of the addition of newly formed CFDs, additional debt that was issued from bond sales in the past year, as well as the addition of newly developed parcels being taxed for the first time this year. An additional 1,587 parcels in total will be added to the fiscal year 2021-22 levy. Also reflected in the levy are the savings we were able to achieve for over 4,100 parcels with the pooled refunding that was completed in January. As a reminder, 12 CFDs were refunded in the pooled refunding, and staff continually looks for opportunities to achieve savings such as this for property owners in the district service area. Communicated to the board at the time the pooled refunding was approved, A letter has been drafted with input by the district's executive team and will be mailed out to the affected property owners in August, ahead of them receiving their property tax bills. This letter communicates the district's commitment to responsible stewardship of public funds identified in one of the district's strategic priorities, as well as summarizes the refunding and highlights the anticipated savings each respective property owner will receive. This concludes my report. Staff's recommendation is for the board to approve the two resolutions, one of which establishes the assessment district and CFD levy and authorizes the county to impose those for collection. The other sets the GO bond tax rates and provides the county with the information needed in order to update and collect those taxes as well. With that said, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board? Director Corona, any questions?
No questions.
I'll then look for a motion and a second on this item.
I'll move.
Second.
It was moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Record. Would you please call the roll?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. With that, why don't we take about a 10-minute break? We could resume our meeting. I think we have a special presentation by Mr. Jones on some of the activities he's working on. I know he's grabbing a quick glass of water there, but why don't we go ahead? We will put Mr. Jones ahead of the Outdoor Water Efficiency Program and welcome Paul Jones to the podium. And thank you for coming out today and giving us a report on the activities you have been working on.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. It's really wonderful to be here and see everyone and address you today. I put a presentation together and a board letter to give an update on the executive support activities I've been undertaking for Eastern Municipal Water District during this transition time. So let me go ahead and get started here. Just as background, of course, the board appointed Joe, general manager, on May 3rd, 2021. But prior to that, as you know, the board worked very closely with me in a transition plan to be able to support Joe and the district as we transition to new leadership. And so the Fourth Amendment of my employment contract with the district was approved in September 2020 and did provide the opportunity for overlap with the new general manager. That's been, by the way, consistent with all the general manager transitions in the district's history. They've been a little bit longer in the transition sometimes, but I was afforded the same luxury with Tony Pack, and it was very helpful. So that extended the term of my contract to August 31st, 2021, and under that provision, it required that I remain available to the successor general manager and board by phone, email, in person for consultation, and for special assignments. So I've continued to work in that capacity and provided as-needed support not only to Joe. We've used all those modes, phone, email, in person, just about everything to communicate. With the virtual formats that you've talked about, it's been very, I think, helpful to be able to do that. So I wanted to quickly go through today kind of six top-line activities that I've been working on for the district and just give you a brief update on those. Activity number one is the MET rate refinement process. This process was initiated at the beginning of the year. It's been interesting because the initial goal was to develop a new component for Metropolitan's rates and charges to replace the water stewardship charge. That component of MET's rate structure was suspended by MET in 2020 as a result of the San Diego litigation. The direction was to come up with a new component within MET's rate structure to provide the funding source. Those funds from that component of the rate structure fund the demand management programs, all the water use efficiency incentives, the rebates, and very importantly, the local resources program. So there was funds available that could bridge over until this new structure could be put in place or this new component could be put in place. However, I think with the drought coming up, obviously, the MEP board will likely want to, and their member agencies, utilize the efficiencies for conservation more heavily, and so it's very important to get this resolved, I think, at this time. So my activities have really focused on analysis, written recommendations. I've coordinated with the EMWD finance and executive staff and the member agencies to look at not only what the staff's proposing at MET, but alternatives that have been put forth by the member agencies. This also involved working on guiding principles for a framework for the rate structure, and also participating on behalf of Eastern with the Eastern staff at each of the 11 work group meetings, and the 11th meeting is today. That's include pre-meetings with Eastern staff and coordination, reviewing the materials, and also talking to other member agency participants of whom I'm acquainted with and providing that feedback to Joe and his team. The current schedule is a little bit fluid. They have a meeting today, as I mentioned, at 1 p.m. I will be participating in that with staff. The goal is to take a recommendation to the board in August with an option to extend that to September if it isn't ready yet. And then thereafter, there's a proposal to look at the other components of MET's rate structure. MET's rate structure was initially adopted in 2001. Through a process that went from 1999 to 2001. So it's 20 years old, and I think there is going to be an effort to look at that more of the other components of the rate structure. So my contacts, and I've been coordinating with Laura, John, Jolene, and Joe, of course. The second activity is the City of Murrieta and Riverside LAFCO's Focused Municipal Services Review on Water Services within Western, Eastern, and Rancho Water. It's been also a multi-year process, but it did result in the completion of an initial or a final draft report in December of 2020. There was a public review process, and also response to comments were recently issued on July 13th. And in fact, an additional addendum showing the corrections in the report was issued on the 20th. There's currently a public workshop on this scheduled for August 26 of this year, so upcoming in August, about a month from now. And I continue to work with Joe and the staff too. And one of the things we're looking at now is if you look at the structure of the MSR, they're all independent ownership scenarios. So it's either all Western, all Rancho, or all Eastern. And one of the questions we're exploring is there a hybrid alternative potentially that meets some needs and really serves all the districts well? And so we're discussing that, looking at that right now. And also we need to resolve this because we have boundary issues down there that we need to have addressed in the southwest boundary. So I will continue to coordinate on this with Laura, John Ward, and Joe, of course. So activity three is the Santa Ana River Conservation and Conjunctive Use Program. As you recall, this is a long-term watershed-scale collaborative multi-benefit program, habitat, water use efficiency, and groundwater banking. The portion I continue to be involved in is the 137,000 acre-feet of shared dryer storage that are located in the six sites throughout the Santa Ana River watershed, and including the Hemet-San Jacinto Basin. So really the two things I've been focusing on are the two agreements, the key agreements that are needed with Metropolitan and the agencies to secure a water supply for the banking facilities. And the first agreement is the SARCUP MET member agency agreement. And then the second agreement is the SARCUP MODOC agreement. And I'll talk about those very quickly. The SARCUP member agency agreement provides for an authorized exchange of water with San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District when they have surplus supplies. That's exchanged through MET. Met makes an equivalent amount of 50% of that water available for the SARCUP program. If that water is stored, those who are participating in the program will get what's called an extraordinary supply benefit, which is a fairly significant additional benefit during a Met allocation. The other agreement is the SARCUP-MODOC agreement, and that focuses on some issues between OCWD and MODOC, and also if there's surplus water under the program that MODOC could have access to. Director Record was very helpful last March. We closed that agreement out with OCWD and MODOC, but we needed to finalize the agreement with Metropolitan. My role has really been kind of developing the terms and conditions for the agreements, coordinating with the agencies, specifically Western, Eastern, MODOC, OCWD, and IUA, and then the negotiations with Met. And I'm pleased to report that the final SARCUP Met agreement was approved by the Met staff and legal counsel in mid-June. Eastern had approved the terms and conditions for the agreement, both agreements already, as did most of the other agencies. However, MODOC and OCWD have not approved those, and so we're trying to get those to the finish line. And I'm actually also happy to report that both OCWD and MODOC have the two agreements on their agendas for today, MODOC right now and OCWD tonight. So that will hopefully get us to the finish line on these very important, two very important agreements. Prospectively, there is going to need to be another agreement between the water banking facility owners, Western, Eastern, OCWD, and Valley, and that'll be a coordinated operating agreement of how we make decisions to put water in and extract water out of those water banks and how it's coordinated together. And so there, that's going to be a coming attraction. The staff contacts on this have been Linnea, Brian Powell, Leanne Kirk, and Joe, of course. So activity four has been support for the California Safer Program implementation. And this is something I've been working on with Danielle Coates and Jolene Walsh, and also helping Danielle coordinate with AQUA and CMUA on this. But backing up a little bit, under SB 200, the state authorized the $130 million per year for addressing noncompliant water systems, and that was implemented through the state's what they call their SAFER program. A big milestone event that happened recently was they finished what was called a needs assessment. This is a 330-page, very detailed document with multiple appendices. And it provides costs needed to address the issues in the state of California, as well as a gap analysis. It looks at, though, four categories. It looks at the 320 failing noncompliant water systems that are on the Human Right to Water list, but it also includes state small systems that are less than 25 service connections, thousands of individual wells, and also what they call so-called at-risk system, where they came up with a scoring that if a system is in compliance but it has certain factors, it's considered at risk. So the report came up with an estimated cost of $2.28 to $9.13 billion, a big range, to bring all of these systems at risk, wells, and state smalls into compliance. And I think the concern has been that the state is kind of grossly overstating the financial needs. And what that's going to lead to is $130 million a year isn't enough, and we need to have a water tax. So my role has really been to review and analyze the needs assessment, and importantly, a component of it called the affordability assessment. I've participated in the AQUA and CMUA work groups with Danielle. They drafted a very significant comment letter to the state board that was issued July 1st, and we wrote a good portion of that. And the focus is they really need to pivot to implementation and focusing on the systems that are not compliant, not at-risk systems, not other things that there just isn't the money to fix right now. So that's been my role in that, and that's kind of ongoing. Activity 5 was brought up in Joe's report this morning, and this is the redistricting of the board divisions. As Joe mentioned, the director divisions will need to be potentially rebalanced for population increases and shift. shifts. We brought an item back to the board in February, which had a detailed work plan, and it had several components. One was modeling with not only just to look at population, but to provide information to the board on demographics, income, other relevant issues to really try to say, we're not just going to look at rebalancing population necessarily, but look at communities of interest. And then have an iterative process with the board to see that modeling data and what those reconfigurations in the director divisions would be for those communities of interest, and have the board comfortable with that before you go through your public process. So I've coordinated the preparation of that work plan. We'll be working with staff on this. As Joe mentioned, August 16th, the data is going to be available to start working with this, and we'll continue to coordinate with staff on that. So that Brian Powell, Gordon Ng, John Ward, April, and obviously Joe are involved in this. Another item that the board's aware of is the recycled water rate study and providing support on that. This is an effort to update as needed the recycled water cost allocation methodology and the overall rate structure. There's a number of tasks that I'm working with John Adams and Laura Nomura on this that we'll be getting into, and that's really looking at other rate structures of other agencies. I think identifying a recycled water cost and benefits how it benefits the potable water system, how it benefits the wastewater system, and do a really good quantitative analysis of that. And also look at the customer classes and understand, you know, based on their customer classes, use of water, their willingness to stay within allocations, their willingness not to peak on the system, how does that benefit the district financially? And use all that information to come up with a relook at the rate structure and make sure it's current. So my role will be to assist with conceptualizing the alternative cost allocation and revenue recovery approaches, and then also to support and assist staff in developing a scope of work for some outside modeling that will probably need to be done by a consultant if necessary, and to, of course, coordinate on the reporting and materials to the board. So also I've been involved and continue to be involved in supporting staff and also with my current assignments in water industry activities. I am serving out my terms and completing my terms as past president of the Water Reuse Association, and I am also serving out my term as a board member of the Water Research Foundation, the National Water Research Foundation. I also am serving through the end of August on the Southern California Water Coalition, and then again we'll be transitioning that out. But my activities in water reuse, I am on their executive committee and have been working on their budget and strategic planning priorities. A big emphasis over the last month has been in recycled water funding at the national level. Title 16 and the EPA Alternative Water Supply Program. As the board knows, there's infrastructure bills flying through. There's typical warring factions in Congress. There's a bipartisan infrastructure bill that I heard as of last Friday on a call with Water Reuse has about a 50-50 chance of moving forward. That has $579 billion. And then, of course, the Democrats have a reconciliation bill that's $3.5 trillion. All of which are including some elements of infrastructure funding. And what we've been doing is working with the other associations through water reuse, also coordinating with MET, who with Southern Nevada is proposing under Title 16, a new large recycled water program for $500 million plus. Water recycling projects, and doing that while also protecting the other components of Title 16. So, for example, Jolene and I were on a really good call last week with the MET staff as well as Water Reuse and others, and continue to coordinate on advocacy for this. On Water Research Foundation, I am on the Water Research Foundation board, but also the Research Advisory Council. In May, we had meetings all-day meetings to go over the research priority program and select vet projects for research funding, and we did put out $2.4 million in awards for 10 projects. I also sit on their diversity and inclusion and research innovation strategy committees, and we're working on some performance metrics there. On Southern California Water Committee, I was and will till the end of August be on the Recycle Water Task Force. April was involved. They put out a video, an advocacy video, which I think was a very good product. And then also they are now looking at forming an accessibility and affordability and equity task force within the Water Coalition. They have a kickoff event that's going to be this Friday for that at their quarterly luncheon. And the name of the program is Equity, Access, and Affordability. And our own Danielle Coates and Dr. Kurt Schwabe will be on that panel. But again, that will be transitioned over. It's also worth pointing out on water reuse, I do want to mention that as I transition off the board, I think it's very important at Eastern be on the National Water Reuse Board. I've been working with the nominating committee and have put forth Joe as a board member on water reuse at the national level. And so that process is going to happen this summer, and they will then select the new board members who will start service in 2022. So the last item is I've been providing general manager and executive staff support as on an as-needed basis, have a lot of touch points as needed, and have been available for calls, text, emails, and just want to be a resource to the district on various issues that come up, anything Eastern, Met, interagency issues, state and federal matters. Again, these are as-needed requests as directed by Joe. So with that, be happy to answer any questions. That's my home office shown on this. I really appreciate the opportunity to continue to support the district. This has been a great transition to an excellent new general manager, and I think it's gone very smoothly. Compared to other agencies, the selection and transition process, I think, has gone very well. And so I just really appreciate being part of it. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just think it's great that that you're available and that this transition is occurring in the manner that it is. These items and issues are too important to just abandon, or have some people start from scratch.
No, I agree. I'm glad that you're available, Paul, and I think the transition has gone very well. So, the issues are getting bigger. They're not getting smaller. So I appreciate the assistance.
Yeah, I would appreciate the update. And I do have one question just on SARCAP.
Yes.
So the timing, in your opinion, the timing of getting these agreements finalized and the timing of when Valley might have excess water, do you see the agreement's going to get done way in advance of them having excess water, or do they have excess water now?
No, they don't have excess water. They're a state water project contractor, so they're having the same allocation woes that all state water project contractors are having right now. However, bear in mind, 2018 was the wettest year in history. The allocation on the state water project was 80%.
Yeah.
There was all sorts of water available. If that we had another 2018, the opportunity to get that excess or get that water from Valley, the excess water meant to purchase it to be put in the water banks for the next allocation, which will come most certainly, will be there. So I think there's two things. Not only the agreements are important to get those agreements in place with Metropolitan in particular and the other agencies, but also, of course, the infrastructure, and that's being constructed. Western has a substantial portion of it. It's well underway. Mm-hmm. We're done pretty much with our work out in the Hemet-San Jacinto Basin, and the other partners are working through that part as well, including OCWD and others. So having the infrastructure done, having the agreements in place, and I guess, as I mentioned earlier, I think the third item is the water banking owners need to have kind of their interagency operating agreement together. And so we see that kind of as the next jumping off point. But, it's been a long process, but I think had a great outcome. for Metropolitan and for us, and it's a very unique program. So,
thanks.
Sure.
Director Corona, any questions for Mr. Jones?
No, I'd just like to thank Paul for continuing to help the district in his period of semi-unemployment.
Thank you, Director Corona.
I just had one. Mr. Jones, is your contract run through the end of August? August, so you will be available to come to the August 26th Murrieta.
I wouldn't miss it.
Wouldn't miss it. I'm going to be there, so it'd be great to have you there as an advisor
absolutely.
On that issue. And so, no, I just, in all seriousness, wanted to say thank you again. It is, I think it was very wise of the board to keep you on to do some of these very specific issues, and you're doing a great job with them. So thank you, and thank you for coming out today to give a report.
Thank you, President Pauley. Appreciate it.
Very thank good. All right.
So, President Pauley, I'm going to have to get on the road.
Okay.
My apologies to people that are going to present, but I have reviewed all the presentations for today. The one thing I would like to mention to the board and staff is that, as you will recall, at least 6 months ago, met a board initiated an outside law firm to look at the culture and the workplace environment of Metropolitan. That report was released yesterday, and it's included in your MET report today. So I would encourage you to read it and ask me any questions you may have on it. And with that, I'll see
you
all later.
Thank you, Director Regard. With that, we will go to item 7A, which is the Outdoor Water Use Efficiency Program Update.
Very good. And Dan Carney and our consultant with MV5, Jenna Caprera, will be presenting this item.
Very good. Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for letting us change the agenda around a little this morning on you, but the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, President Pauley and members of the board. So appreciate this opportunity to introduce you to the new Outdoor Water Use Efficiency Program. Joining us today is Jennifer Caprera with NV5. Mm-hmm. And NV5 is the consultant that was hired to develop the marketing outreach materials for this program. Here we are. So today I'll start with just a general overview of the program and talk a little bit about one element, which is the contractor training program. Hand it over to Jenna to really go into some detail about the marketing and branding and messaging, and then wrap up with next steps and questions. So for decades, Eastern has been a leader in water conservation programs, many, many different excellent conservation programs we still have today. The new outdoor program is really focused on residential customers, and it repackages and kind of rebrands a lot of the programs that we've already had, as well as introducing some new ideas. It includes free home consultations and some direct install services for smart controllers, drip irrigation equipment that we haven't had before. Of course, it also includes all of the rebates that are available through Metropolitan Water District. One of the, I think, compelling features of this program is we're really doing it as an in-house homegrown program, and we're going to be able to do a lot of hands-on helping with our customers in terms of getting through the application processes and so forth. It also has the free online contractor program I'll talk more about. It is all set to launch next Monday, and our goal is to have between 500 and 1,000 residential customers participate every year. The online contractor program was originally conceived even before COVID, and it was designed to be an in-person, hands-on training. As you can imagine, landscape contractors are very hands-on people. And with COVID, we switched directions and made that an online available program to everyone. And it actually turns out to have a lot of good benefits. Contractors are able to go online at any time that's convenient for them. Additionally, it's easy to update that program as new regulations become available. And all of our customers have access to that program for free if they're interested in exploring some of the best management practices in that training. We launched that April 1st, and it includes homework, quizzes, final exam. It scares everybody a little bit, but we try to make it friendly as possible. And contractors who finish that program, if they're licensed California contractors, have the ability to be listed on the microsite for the new program as a contractor that's finished the training and help promote the program for us. Here's some examples of the materials that NV5 put together for us, some of the marketing materials. One that I particularly like is the direct mail piece on the left there. This was mailed to our residential customers, and the top portion of it introduces the customers to this new program and the training, and then they can cut off the bottom portion and give that to their landscape contractors, which I think was pretty innovative on NV5's part. We've also had a number of other outreach modes, if you will, the website, social media, Menifee 24/7, et cetera, to promote this training program. Actually, as of today, we have 43 contractors participating in that training at various levels of completion, which we're very excited about. It actually exceeded our expectations for how many we might be able to get. We're working very closely with them, reaching out, talking to them on the phone, emailing, anything we can do to really encourage them to finish that training. One of the things about the training is, well, two elements that I think are key. One is it includes very detailed information about our rebate programs and metropolitan rebate programs so that when contractors go and work with our customers, they're very well informed. The second really important component of it is it incorporates all of the recognized best management practices for water management in the landscape, which, of course, is, you know, about 50% of our potable water use is in the landscape on an annual basis. So we really want to encourage contractors to, you know, improve their skills in managing that water. So I'll hand it over to Jenna now to go into the branding and messaging.
Thank you, Dan, and good morning, General Manager Muwad, Directors Polly, Record, Corona, Armstrong, Slauson, and everyone joining us here today. As Dan mentioned, I am Jenna Caprera, and I'm the project manager for the outreach campaign for this program. Now, while the online contractor training has been launched, I want to note that the residential campaign has not yet been rolled out. Our team will launch the full campaign targeting residents and contractors this Monday, July 26th, as Dan mentioned, following this presentation. Now, throughout my slides, you will see examples of marketing pieces, but please know they have not yet been shown to the public. Now, before I delve into the campaign, I want to briefly touch on how we got here. In 2020, our team conducted a quantitative customer survey to gauge perceptions of the program. Insights from the survey, along with feedback from EMWD, have guided our strategy for this campaign. It highlights key benefits and top-rated program features outlined by residents and includes messaging and outreach strategies to overcome obstacles discovered. Here you can see some of the key messages, along with the campaign logo, Landscapes for Living, and the tagline, Design Your Outdoors. Our strategy is to focus on what makes this program different from past water conservation programs, demonstrate it is easily and financially accessible to all residents, and promote the benefits of participating, which include reducing water, saving money, and gaining beautiful landscaping suited for their needs. And here you can see some examples of the drought messaging that we've incorporated into the campaign and how it relates to future and current drought conditions in the region. Example messages include EMWD has multiple free and low-cost programs and regional rebates offered through Metropolitan Water District to help customers reduce water use and save money. Landscapes for Living complements these efforts and was developed to help customers create water-efficient front and backyards to enjoy year-round. The program will help to offset customers' water costs by creating long-term sustainable landscaping. And EMWD is a steward of water efficiency, and investing in this program is a responsible step that provides customers with immediate and future benefits. The campaign messaging and branding is included in all marketing and outreach tactics, including the program microsite, landscapesforliving.emwd.org, which acts as the central hub for residents and landscape contractors to find everything they need to learn about and participate in the program. A microsite is a brand-specific website that organizations use to promote their programs and campaigns, and this microsite is hosted on EMWD's subdomain. Here you can see the homepage with a clear call to action that encourages residents to sign up for free services. The program microsite explains how it works and highlights its many benefits for both residents and landscape contractors. It is easily accessible via EMWD's main website, and it links back to EMWD.org, so users enjoy a seamless experience while navigating between the two. This functionality further emphasizes that this is an EMWD program. The website is also available to users in both English and in Spanish. The services and contact form is readily available when residents are ready to request one or all of EMWD's free services, or if they just have a question. They can also indicate they would like more information about METS rebates from a knowledgeable EMWD rep who can help walk them through the process of applying. Additionally, the microsite includes multiple links out to METS website, socalwatersmart.com, where residents can apply for rebates directly. Here are examples of some of the key marketing pieces we've developed to inform residents about the program. You can see a brochure, FAQ, newsletters, and e-blasts, all of which are available in English and Spanish. And I believe everyone on the board received copies of the brochure and FAQ for you to take a look at your leisure. We've been sure to use images that represent EMWD's diverse service areas and customers, in addition to landscaping examples that are attainable. And here are some example advertisements. The ads target adults 45 plus based on research we conducted with our media buyer of home ownership and EMWD service areas. The media buy includes a mix of digital, audio, and print in English and in Spanish. And here's the preliminary marketing implementation schedule through Q3 and Q4 of 2021. The microsite will launch and will continue to promote the online contractor training, adding new contractors to the site as they complete the course. We'll send out a bill insert and launch email marketing campaigns to reach customers. Additionally, we'll use EMWD's existing resources, including its newsletter and eConnect, to promote the program. Advertising will launch with print ads in Valley News, La Prensa, streaming audio on Spotify, and digital ads including display, Facebook and Instagram, Menifee 24/7, and the Riverside Press Enterprise website. Social media promoting the program will be posted across EMWD's platforms on a regular basis, and we'll work with EMWD's media relations team to send out the launch press release and pitch interviews with key local outlets. We'll continue to pursue partnerships with product manufacturers, community groups, and associations, to name a few, and present program updates to the board, city council, public interest groups, and others. And finally, with COVID restrictions now easing, we'll work with EMWD to evaluate opportunities to participate in and host community events. And as we monitor and evaluate results, we will determine the appropriate strategies and tactics for 2022. And with that, I'll hand it back to continue with next steps.
Thank you, Jenna. Well, as you can imagine, there's been a tremendous amount of activity behind the scenes with EMWD staff. I want to particularly mention the unbelievably great coordination with PGA, customer service, and conservation staff, all working together very closely with Jenna and NV5. We're planning to continue to work very closely with the contractors to get as many contractors familiar with the program as possible, make it easy for our customers to find the help they need. And plan on launching this microsite next Monday and monitoring the progress, and hopefully we'll have a deluge of activity right away, and we're looking forward to that and think we're prepared to help our customers doing that. With that, that concludes our presentation. I'd be delighted to take any questions or if you have any for Jenna.
You have any questions?
I don't have any questions. I think it's a very worthwhile program, though. Thank you.
Agreed. Director Corona, any questions on this item?
No questions.
I have one bit of, first of all, thank you, Mo. Great presentation. Thank you for the work you're doing. It's very important to us. I'm going to take the privilege to do some social commentary from the dais here. One of the things that frustrates me greatly, and I think a lot of consumers, is, you know, I could use my phone right now to change the air conditioning at my home from here if I wanted to. I will not do that because my wife would yell at me greatly if I was to turn it down right now. But I go to my home sprinkler controller, and it's like you need a programming degree to deal with that. And so just from your guys' knowledge, is there any hope that we're getting towards a more consumer-friendly landscape controller for the folks like me that just don't want to have a be a rocket science on it?
President Pauly, and Linnea is going to have to stop me from talking about this. I don't have my cell phone, but if I did, I would show you the screen, which is exactly similar to the air conditioning screen for my irrigation system.
Okay.
Even though irrigation is my thing, I don't want to mess with the controller. I don't want to have to program it. The technology that's included in these programs, and maybe you can be one of our first participants, will allow customers to have installed for free a controller that does exactly what you just mentioned. It's so easy, and I track it every week with my water budget because I'm an EMWD customer, and it's spot on with my water budget as long as I don't play with the buttons.
Okay.
So it's there, and it's transformative, really. I mean, we've never had that before.
I'd love to be a test case or whatever because that is one of the things that just ruts me. I go out to my garage, and I look at that thing, and I just walk away, and then I have the gentleman that does our landscaping in our house, and he plays with it, and, you know, it's just
oh, my gosh.
I figured there's got to be a technical solution coming our way that makes it consumer-friendly. So I would love to follow up on that and learn more about it because I think that will actually help all of us save water if you make it a little more programmably friendly.
Wonderful. Thank you.
We will definitely follow up. Sounds like we have a volunteer, Dan, so let's follow up.
Anyway, with that, thank you both for coming. Great presentations. Thank you for the work you do on behalf of the district. That will take us to item number 8, which are receive and file. Do I have a motion for our various reports?
Make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
I'll second it.
Second by Director Slauson. Could you please call the roll?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. That will bring us to our calendar review. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. For your calendar this morning, we have about 5 events that are district sponsored for your consideration this morning. I won't go through each one in the savings of time, but we do have General Manager Mawad, who is scheduled to be participating in each of these events. And if anyone's interested, please let us know. Moving on to page 2, we have your calendar. And I'm not sure if you'd like me to go through each one this morning. It's up to you.
I'm good with mine, so I think you can skip that part.
Okay. Moving on to page 3. Before I do that, let me just mention one point that I do have. After the board meeting on Wednesday, August 4th, there is a retirement luncheon for Jeff Wall. So it's at 11:30. Will do.
Are we going to let Jeff speak at the retirement event? Okay. Well, that might have to be a separate closed session item.
Okay. And then moving on, we have your future important dates to remember, and those, if anyone's interested in participating in any of those events, we also have flyers attached with event information for your reference. We have the next 3 months of board meetings, board committee meetings, and the interagency meetings. And on page 4, we have the out-of-office schedule and the district office holiday schedule with Labor Day on September 6th. We'll be in observance of that. And if there are no questions,
all right.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. We'll take us to our board meeting reviews, and we will start with Director Armstrong, please.
Okay. I actually did not attend the Quail Valley
community group, so I know our staff was there. CalDESAL Executive Committee. I think essentially what CalDESAL is doing right now is sort of a priority. Is they're kind of looking at themselves as an association and where they can improve and what kind of value they deliver and how they get more sponsorship and et cetera. So there's a number of efforts going on along that front. And then yesterday I had my update with General Manager Joe Lawad, and that was a good meeting, and I appreciated that, Joe. So thank you.
Good. Director Corona.
Okay, I had the Rancho California Water District meeting on the 8th, a very short agenda. Probably the biggest discussion item was whether or not or how to put delinquent accounts onto the tax rolls, just as we did. And that's my report.
Very good. Thank you so much. I attended the Winchester MAC, which was back in person for the first time in over a year, and it was exceptionally well attended. We had Juan Perez from the County of Riverside there to give some updates on land use. Alma and I did a fairly extensive review of Eastern. Again, I cannot say she is fantastic. Did a great job in presenting. I volunteered Joe Mawad to come to a future meeting, and there are some questions out there about future sewer usage. As you know, Winchester is growing, a lot of residential homes coming in the neighborhood, and so I think it might be good at a future meeting to have the general manager out there and maybe bring along our director of engineering and other things if you want to come to the Winchester MAC and experience that. When Western WRCOG Executive Committee was the first meeting with the new general manager there, which Kurt Wilson, and participated in some things, including I'm having a one-on-one with him in the near future about water task force and some other things to make sure that the new direction of RCOG includes a water component to it, because I think it's, of all the things I've been involved in recently, I will say it's one of the more successful things that we do for them. So I want to make sure that keeps on the radar there. Always a great meeting with the general manager, as all the other directors have mentioned. Went to the MODOC Water Policy Forum dinner the other night. Jeff Keitlinger was the featured speaker. Excellent presentation. I think Jeff Keitlinger, now that he's no longer in Met, can speak a little more freely. And he did on some things, but that was always good. And then we had the EMWD Western Joint Committee meeting the other day, in which we discussed a lot of the items. And again, Joe does a fantastic job of bringing them up to speed on what's facing both our agencies, especially with coronavirus, how we're getting back into post-coronavirus world. So that was good. Director Slauson.
Yes, on July 8th, I attended an update with Joe Mawad and went over a number of issues that affect the district. On the 9th, I attended the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce meeting. Alma and Consuelo were both there, and they presented an update. Southern California Gas Company gave an update on their two low-emission turbines they're going to construct. They have a major station there on the east end of Moreno Valley and a number of retrofitting other equipment to make them low emissions. And we had a joint meeting with the Metropolitan Water District, and one of the things we discussed, common interest, like the wells proposed in Moreno Valley. Also, there was some discussion about the MSR for Marietta Division. Attended the SAPA committee meeting yesterday, and we received the Government Financial Officers Association Distinguished Budget Award. Had an update on the Prop 84 and Prop 1 implementation grants for the next rounds, and approved the 2022 salary schedule as required by CalPERS. And then additionally, I had a meeting on the 16th with Lana Wilson. She's with Riverside. She's the executive officer for the RCC Foundation. And we discussed the nomination committee that I'm serving on and had sort of an update on the status of what the foundation is doing. That's it.
Very good. Thank you. That will move to directors' comments or future agenda items. Do any of the directors have a comment for public consumption? Director Crone, any comments or future agenda items?
I don't have anything.
Very good. That will then take us, I understand, from our legal counsel, we do have a necessity for closed session.
Yes, Mr. Chair, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, as identified as Item 11A. My question, I have a question for the General Manager. Joe, I have a separate closed session call-in number. Will we be using that?
Yes, Stephen. We are going to adjourn this call and reconvene in closed session. That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. We will adjourn to closed session for the moment.
And
Yes, we do. Oh, wait, we've got a bridge. Somebody on that end might have the other meeting still open.
Okay. Can we correct that? So we don't have the rock experience. The rock shock experience.
I'm going to mute this for the moment.
Stephen on the line.
If you'd like to report out, Mr. President.
Yes, please.
Hello?
Hello? It's somebody over there. I think that has both meetings going. It's the only thing I can think of. Or they're joiners.
Is that better?
Just got it. Wait, is you?
Okay, we'll get a report out from legal counsel, please.
Stephen?
Nicole, are you still there?
Yes.
Go ahead, Stephen. A report out from legal counsel.
Are we muted? He can't hear
Who
us.
Who else is here? Just you and me? Steve?
Can't hear us. Are we muted?
They can't hear
us. Can't hear us.
We can hear you.
You are no longer muted.
There we go. Did this one get... Okay, we're good.
All right, let's have legal counsel report back from closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. Instruction was given to staff. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Thank you. Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until August 4th, 2021. Thank you. August 4th.